President Trump's first State of the Union address might not seem like a science story. There wasn't much science in it. On social media, climate scientists lamented that Mr. Trump talked about the devastating fires, floods, and hurricanes of 2017 without connecting the dots to climate change. Major professional societies urged the president to include national labs and funding for academic science in his infrastructure initiative, and they highlighted the role of immigrants and international travel in the advancement of science. Through it all, my next guest was tweeting science-related quotes from past presidential addresses, going all the way back to George Washington's speech before the Continental Congress. Jamie Vernon is executive director and CEO of Sigma Xi, the Scientific Research Society. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First of all, I have to say that your Twitter feed was one of the highlights of the State of the Union for me, so thank you.
You're welcome. I was trying to get the word out there. If it wasn't going to be said in the speech, I thought it could be said on Twitter.
Well, so let's talk about what was said in this State of the Union address. There was really only one overt mention of science, came right at the end, kind of a generic nod to the American spirit of innovation.
Americans fill the world with art and music. They push the bounds of science and discovery.
So what did you think of that statement?
Well, as you said, it's kind of a neutral statement, and I think that that is a tactic to, in some ways, acknowledge that the country does invest in scientific enterprise without necessarily taking a position as to, you know, the good or bad aspects of what science contributes. So I think he was just playing it safe.
It's in distinct contrast to, I think, a lot of the rhetoric that we heard in President Obama's final State of the Union address in 2016. And the science-related quote there, the moment that I think stands out for most people, was when President Obama was likening the space race to the climate change challenge.
60 years ago, when the Russians beat us into space, we didn't deny Sputnik was up there. We didn't argue about the science or shrink our research and development budget. We built a space program almost overnight, and 12 years later, we were walking on the moon.
That moment got a lot of laughs, certainly, but, you know, maybe something deeper in there about the value of science and what our scientific community can do in a challenging situation?
Well, it's clearly a demonstration of an appreciation for science that he integrated into his administration. I, full disclosure, I worked in the Obama administration for a number of years at the Department of Energy as an analyst, and you know, this was a highlight of his administration for the scientific community. It's nice to be acknowledged for the work that we do, the contributions we make to the country, both in just improving the human condition, but also in advancing and growing the economy. I think President Obama acknowledged that throughout his administration. He had the first science fairs on at the White House, and he had the first chief technology officer. He really integrated science into his administration, and the scientific community appreciated it, and I think the country benefited from it.
I'm talking with Jamie Vernon of Sigma Xi about the history of science in presidential addresses. Let's go all the way back to the very beginning. I guess it wasn't called the State of the Union address at that point, but George Washington's first annual address to Congress. And you had kind of a quick quote: "There is nothing which can better deserve your patronage than the promotion of science and literature." I mean, I found that interesting that he put science and literature side by side. I think these days we tend to put science and literature in very different categories and wouldn't necessarily expect to see them mentioned in the same sentence.
Yeah, in the early addresses to Congress, it was interesting that science was often lumped in with the arts. I think it's the idea that there is a philosophy of science that was being explored at the time, and we were just on the beginnings of understanding the universe. We had made some significant astronomical discoveries, and we were beginning to understand how we could apply science to health and other areas. At the launch of the initiation of the country, George Washington was saying, you know, there's some things we have to take care of business-wise. And what precedes that, quote, is a statement about the uniformity in the currency, weights, and measures of the United States. and the importance of that. And so it was the beginning of sort of a standardization and approach to how we develop evidence in order to build policy and advance the country. So you're right. But at the beginning of the early days, it was all about arts and philosophy and science lumped together.
I think one of my favorites that you quoted, that you tweeted, is John Quincy Adams, 1825. And I'm going to read this. I wish we had a recording of this to be able to play, because part of what I love about it is just the pure, like, flowery language. Mm-hmm. In assuming her station among the civilized nations of the earth, it would seem that our country had contracted the engagement to contribute her share of mind, of labor, and of expense to the improvement of those parts of knowledge which lie beyond the reach of individual acquisition, and particularly to the geographical and astronomical sciences.
It's wonderful.
I mean, basically saying the U.S. has committed to Earth and space science.
Yes. What's amazing is John Quincy Adams was really appreciative of science. And this was his first annual message. Subsequent messages had less of an emphasis on science, but that initial one was, you know, very optimistic about the contributions that science and enlightenment and knowledge could do for the country. And it's exciting to read his messages, that particular one, and how much he cared about science. But he also saw that it was a way of establishing the country on the international stage as a leader, intellectual leader. And he cites often in that particular paragraph, he says, the governments of France and Great Britain and Russia have devoted the genius, the intelligence, the treasures of their respective nations to the common improvement of the species. It just tells you that he wants us to be on par with those countries. And in years to come, it's interesting that we quickly do rise to that challenge.
All right. Were there any others that, in looking back through history, kind of rose to the top as being real science enthusiasts? I mean, obviously, Kennedy was talking about science and the space race a lot, but were there others that jumped out at you?
Yeah, well, Ulysses S. Grant was an interesting person. I didn't expect him, having a military background, to have such an appreciation for science, but he often sort of echoed some of the flowery language of John Quincy Adams, and he would cite the observations connected with the transit of Venus that are so useful and interesting to the scientific world. I mean, that you wouldn't expect that from a military leader, but he did show that. And, you know, of course, in later years, you had FDR's emphasis on use of science to benefit the public, and in fact, he had so many health challenges that I would actually have expected more from him, but he did often say that science should be more accessible to the public. And others that were really used science, Dwight D. Eisenhower, obviously, after we went through the circumstances of using the atomic bomb in World War II, wanted to achieve peaceful goals through science collaboration, particularly with the Soviets. And John F. Kennedy followed on to Dwight Eisenhower and sort of had the same idea. Let's work with the Russians on this. Obviously, things went in a different direction, but initially it was an effort to bring countries together.
I'm talking with Jamie Vernon of Sigma Xi about changing presidential attitudes towards science and how it shows up in their State of the Union or other annual addresses through history. Abraham Lincoln is one that kind of surprised me. I mean, mm-hmm. kind of known as a bit of a science geek, and he's actually the one who signed legislation to establish the National Academy of Sciences, but science doesn't really show up much in his addresses.
No, it doesn't. I mean, obviously, it's something I observed in reading a lot of the State of the Union addresses, is that when there's conflict going on, science sort of takes a step back, which obviously in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, that was different because we were relying on science to help us take a military advantage. But Abraham Lincoln seemed to be focused on the applications of science to agriculture, largely, and that makes sense in the time, but he really didn't emphasize it as something that was advancing the country.
Looking back through all these speeches and understanding you haven't done an exhaustive historical investigation of this, but did you see long-term trends? I mean, there's been a lot of hand-wringing about the degradation of attitudes towards science, a lack or a loss of appreciation of science by the American public. Is that something that you see as a long-term trend, or are we really looking at shorter-term, president-to-president, person-to-person variation throughout history?
My observation is that all presidents appreciate what science can do for them, and I have yet to see any example of an address that discounts the benefits of science. Some, more than others, see inconvenience in some of the results that come out of science, and in many ways, you know, Donald Trump's recent State of the Union address included the idea of clean coal, which is not consistent with what we understand about the energy sector, that there really is no clean coal that's economically viable at this time. And so what happens, I think, is that there is this conflict between the actual evidence that's produced and how that evidence has impact on policy. And so when you do see conflict there, it's often that, in the case of the coal industry, for example, renewable energy is advancing very quickly, and it's changing the society and our economy in a way that certain political groups aren't comfortable with. And so, you know, that's where you might see some challenges. But from Republicans to Democrats, all down the line, you will find a suggestion about the benefits of science in their speeches. George Bush was actually a huge proponent of science, and he actually was asking for doubling of the NSF budget back in 1993. I mean, that tells you that he had a different perspective of his son's administration, where he was largely cutting the budgets for science. So it's interesting observations you can make about all of them finding value in investments in science.
That's Jamie Vernon. He is the executive director and CEO of Sigma Xi, the Scientific Research Society, and also publisher of American Scientist. He spent President Trump's State of the Union address tweeting science quotes from past presidential addresses. His Twitter handle, by the way, is at JLVernonPhD. Jamie, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Up next, does Boston have enough housing to handle an Amazon headquarters? Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.